good to be back with you this evening.
I don't know if you got a way to do that one. It's not necessary, but if you need to. All right.
Love technical things. When they work, they're great. And then when they don't work, you got a little effort to put in there. But I think we're in good shape tonight. All right. Good to be back with you. I really appreciate the feedback, not only in the question session last night, but certainly this morning as we've been able to have the brunch and visit with others. And for so many that have talked about what we began last night in talking about the wisdom to deal with life. As you're younger, it's hard sometimes. What I'm talking about, you're going, oh, I can't see that being a big issue with folks. But as you gain experience, I will assure you, you will find that the works of the flesh, as we talked last night in Galatians 5, the anger family, has a very powerful work in some that do not guard their hearts. One of the things that I've learned over the years that it is easy to defeat doctrine. Easy. If you allow the heart to be poisoned and the mind no longer functions as it ought to, you can believe anything. And we'll keep giving that emphasis and showing things, but also showing how knowing God. If I really want to give emphasis in this lesson is when you know God and when we think as He thinks, as we imitate the components of love of 1 Corinthians 13, as we imitate the Beatitudes and the lessons on the Sermon on the Mount of what a Christian's heart looks like, will be fine. But we've got to choose, and it's a crucial battle, because once you lose your mind going down the path of bitterness or anger, you may not get it back. And tonight we're going to talk about justice, oppression, and the character of God. It's really important to understand, who am I? Every day when I wake up, do I thank God? Do I go to God in prayer? As I go through my day, do I constantly think that I'm so thankful I've been forgiven? I am so thankful for how God's hand has worked in my life. You know, your identity is everything. And sometimes folks, they find an identity in the world. The world will offer you an identity. It'll offer you a purpose, but it's like anything that comes from Satan. You're going to find that it's empty. And oftentimes it may destroy you. In Colossians 3, of one of many verses we could look at, if we are a Christian, look at what we have. Look at what God has done for us. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above and not on things on the earth. For your life is, for you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Brethren, I'm concerned about injustices in this life. I'm concerned when I see people mistreat other people. I'm concerned when I have news clips that are presented that are troubling. But I want you to understand, as I look at those things, the one thing I want to be sure that I'm doing is that I'm setting my mind on God first. There are things God has given me to do, and there are things that God handles. And again, kind of reviewing last night, we'll talk about again this tonight. We need to understand that sometimes we can be put on a treadmill by the world to a path that really does not create the righteousness of God. And so, who are we? What is our life like? Who do you belong to? Who do you like to be around? How do you feel that you fit into this world? You know, we all need to belong. Hasn't COVID taught us that? The isolations of COVID made us realize more than ever the importance of relationships. And sadly, during that isolation, we may have attached to people and things that have come over cable TV and the internet and things like that, and we could have potentially let our connection to Christ fade. I hope that hasn't happened to you. But we need to be sure that we don't get caught up in the influences of men. Jesus, warning his disciples in Luke 12:2, he says, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. You know what leaven is? Well, I'm not much about cooking. I'm really good about eating. And, you know, I used to watch cooking shows when I was little, not to learn how to cook, but to imagine what it'd be like to eat it, you know. And And so, you know, now my wife's into recipes and things like that, and leaven, you know, is a little bit of something that helps the bread. A little bit of leaven leavens the whole lump. But there's a particular leaven I want to talk to you about tonight for us. And it's a leaven you may not have talked about much in the Bible. In Mark 8:15, Jesus says, "Then he charged them, saying, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." Have you ever heard a lesson about the leaven of Herod? Politics. We don't ever hear much about politics, do we? We don't ever see much on the news about that. You know, politics has come to dominate our culture. And we need to be very careful about the leaven of Herod. I urge Christians, do not get attached to a party where it becomes your identity. Do not think that what's going to save the world is some politician or party. You can be led down a very, very destructive path once that becomes your identity. Because I'm going to tell you what about politics are, and I'll tell you what I do. I have politicians that I would vote for, you know, maybe an elected, that, you know, I'm not saying against voting. But I'll tell you what, politics is the common currency of politics is accusations and anger. And even politicians that I may vote for, they will use this. And I'm not saying all politicians are bad. Don't get me wrong about that. But I'm just saying that we need to be careful about, particularly when it comes to national politics, about anger and accusations. And we don't want to get caught up in that thinking process. So now let's talk about the kingdoms of this world. And let's talk about Satan. Who is Satan? What does that word mean? The very name Satan has its root in accusations. And in Revelation 12 and verse 10, "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God night and day, has been cast down." Who is that? That's Satan in the context. In verse 12, "For the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time." My brethren, Jesus said when he dealt with the political realm of his world that this is the kingdom of Satan. The realm of the politics is controlled. He's the ruler of this world. He's the prince of this world. And we need to be careful that we don't get caught up in this wrath and accusation that is characterized in the realm of politics. Satan, it's very interesting. Some verses I'd be interested in learning more about and thinking through and looking at. In the book of Zechariah, we have a passage where we have Satan appearing before God to make accusations against the people of God. In Zechariah 3:1, it says, "Then he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to oppose him." You know what Satan doesn't get? This is beautiful. Zechariah 3 will show this. You know what Satan doesn't understand? Satan never anticipated or understood forgiveness. Satan had the idea that here Joshua, in this context, high priest, had dirty clothes. And now that he's dirty, he's standing before a holy God. It's over. I can make accusations and I have destroyed your creation, God. And he didn't anticipate forgiveness. And here the dirty clothes were taken away, and even the new turban was given. And you could read this in First Corinthians 2, where Satan and his adversaries, thinking he could destroy God's people, did not anticipate that it was going to be the cross that would provide forgiveness. Satan defeated himself. But you see, he loves accusation. In Ezra 4 in the Old Testament, there was occasion after they came back from the captivity, there were accusations being made about the people of God. Accusations. Let's talk about that, brethren. If I could give my lesson a subtitle, a different one that I have up there, it is Rush to Judgment. In politics, accusation is used in a very different way than the Christian would use. Remember we studied last night in John 10:10? What is Satan's purpose? To kill, destroy. It's not what God's people are about. You see, Satan does not care if accusations are true. Now, if we have occasion to make accuse someone, if I have sinned, and I'm trying to cover my sin, and you love me, I would want you to come to me and present an accusation. Larry, we love you. You've done this. But what are you doing when you do that to me? You're trying to save me. You're trying to help me. You're trying to free me from the clutches of Satan. You see, the Christian may be involved in an accusation when they're wanting righteousness and they're wanting to help. Politics, accusations are like a bullet. You're trying to kill and destroy your enemy. How does it work in politics? Do I have to tell you? When you got some dirt on your opponent and it's not known, you present it to that opponent as quickly as you can, right? Oh, no, 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 you save it. And you save it till you get as close to the election as you can, and then, boom, here's the October surprise or whatever surprise you want to present. Because you don't care if it's true, you want people to get mad, and you want to win an election. These are dishonest people. My brethren, listen to me carefully right here. Is it okay for Christians to participate in political slander? And a lot of times things are put out there, by the way, I couldn't know if they're true or not. And sometimes it's because I want my man to win that we... Look at Luke 9, verse 54. Here's the spirit we cannot allow into our hearts. And Luke 9, 54, and when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they says, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them just as Elijah did? Here they weren't allowed into this village. Let's go nuke them. That's the spirit of this age. Destroy your enemy. Kill your enemy. Do everything you can. Wipe them out. Verse 55. Here Jesus responded, but he turned and rebuked them and said, you do not know what manner of spirit you're of. Brethren, do you realize, I'm serious, I'm so serious about this. Politics can destroy your soul. If you take a spirit in, whether it comes from brethren, when they've been hurt, we talked about that a little bit last night, or you just take the political realm and you get caught up in that, you've got to be careful. We've got to understand that our hearts have to be protected. And so, this is where some really good-hearted Christians can be vulnerable. You care. Let's say you see a politician that has obviously, unquestionably done terrible things. You can acknowledge that, recognize that, but now let's suppose somebody makes additional charges against this person that you don't know are true or not. You and I have to be fair-minded people. And as I say, we need to be very, very careful when it comes to this realm where it's the gotcha. You see, 2020, did y'all remember 2020? Anything happened in 2020? Remember all of the events on TV that were stirring anger? You know, I was still one of the shepherds in Auburn at that time. We had over 100 students, and we hadn't been able to be with them because of the we did Zoom. We couldn't really be together because of the pandemic. And we had some of our students starting to get, at least one, started to get very angry. You've got to speak out now. They posted some of these memes on social media. Yeah, I've been watching you, and if you don't speak out now about, in this case, racism, I know there's something wrong with you. Let's get out on our social media now. Now, my brethren, that's not right. Now, we did public teaching on this, and we're very happy to do that. But don't rush to judgment, and please don't rush to the internet. We studied James 1:19 last night to be slow to speak, quick to hear, slow to anger.
We want to be fair. And the other thing, you've got to understand, there are things, brethren, please understand this. There are things that we think we know that are happening in our country. We think we know with some degree this has happened, but we don't have the evidence. We don't have a judicial process to fully understand what has happened. Understand, sometimes people want you to make a judgment about something that you are not in a position to judge. And if you question that about politics, how do you like somebody making judgments about you without knowing the facts? And there's just a ton of things in the political realm. They want you to make judgments on it right now, and we don't have the facts. And many times the facts are held back from us. Satan likes to pervert things. Isaiah 5:20, those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. One of the other dangers we face in our heart is pride. You know, when you become proud, you can read minds. When you become proud, you know, I'm a sincere and good guy. I care more than you do, and therefore you got to accept my judgments because I just care about it. Be careful about that spirit. Let me tell you somebody you may know that was crushed by the political mentality of his day. They made false accusations of him, and he was never guilty. They put him through a judicial process that was a rush to judgment, and it was not fair. And matter of fact, they ended up still couldn't convict him because of even that crooked system. You know who that is, don't you? Jesus Christ. In Acts chapter 8 and verse 32, the place in the scripture where he read was this: he was led as a sheep to the slaughter, as a lamb before his shearer is silent, so he opened not his mouth. In his humiliation, his justice was taken away. My brethren, I want to teach you tonight a set of principles that must apply to every realm of life. We must never be unfair. We must never rush to judgment. We must never so hate somebody. And we should not be hating people. We should not hate somebody so much that we don't be fair to that person. That is a spirit that will not stop with politics. It's like a cancer. It can be started here and it can destroy you. And I know of some of young people that once I worked with at Auburn that were destroyed by this. And you've got to be wise. Okay, let's talk about justice now. I love the passages dealing with God. What's God like? You know why I'm so glad? I'm so glad I'm going to answer to God. He won't be unfair. Not only that, he'll forgive me. And he's provided me a way to be cleansed. Have you ever had somebody gossip about you and you never had an avenue to correct it? Have you ever had somebody think something about you and you were never given a chance to be just? It's frustrating. And let me tell you something in life, folks, particularly young people, you're going to experience it. You probably are experiencing it, but you're going to experience it in life. And it's frustrating when there is no justice. And talking of God, in Zechariah 3:5, in Zephaniah 3:5, the Lord is righteous in her midst. He will do no unrighteousness. Every morning he brings his justice to light. He never fails. But the unjust know no shame. You know, when you look at Isaiah 42, one of the servant songs, I don't have the passage printed out, but over and over, the prophecies of the Messiah to come is that he's going to bring justice to the Gentiles. He's going to bring justice to the coastlands. You talk about justice, our God is all about that. Matter of fact, in Deuteronomy 32, he speaks of it in verse 4. He says, he is the rock, his work is perfect, for all of his ways are justice, a God of truth and without injustice, righteous and upright is he. In the book of Psalms, also Psalms 89, righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Mercy and truth go before your face. Notice, justice and mercy. There's another term we need to understand. We need to understand the mercy we've been given. We need to be a merciful people, and merciful people do not rush to judgment, do they? We got to have that spirit. One of the things today when we're talking about redefining justice is the people who are really pushing things within the media and the schools and so on, they basically are saying that moral standards are oppressive. Now, they have moral standards they claim aren't oppressive, and how they come up with them, I don't know, because their philosophy says you can't have a moral standard, but they do have some. But basically, if you oppose, like we talked about last night, things within the sexual realm, the struggles, the questions people have today about homosexuality and other questions like that, if you oppose that, you are oppressive. You know what? I'm going to prove this to you before we finish tonight. We're going to talk about some of the things in detail. And I want you to know that when God has a moral standard, it is always for our good. And Deuteronomy 6:24, and the Lord commanded us to observe all of these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always. We're going to spend a little time talking about Romans 1. And I want to show you why God loves and cares for us and warns us about certain paths. And so over and over, if you serve the Lord, and Jesus pointed this out, if you're going to serve me, they hated me before they hated you, you're just going to have to understand God's people are commonly going to be treated unjustly. But you know how it is, when you've been treated unjustly, what do you imagine sometimes? Don't you imagine, I wish the person could see. I wish this person could be fair. I wish they could see they've judged me wrong. Haven't you felt that way? Then don't let us be that way. That's really what we want to be fair. So now, let's deal with the ABCs, Justice 101. How do we know what justice is? All of these things are being redefined today. Justice, first off, starts with the individual. And that's being denied today, brother. It starts today with the individual. In Ezekiel 18:20, the soul who sins shall die. The son shall not bear the guilt of the father, nor the father bear the guilt of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. You judge me by what I do and what I think and what I say. Don't judge me about what my father did. Don't judge me about what my brother may have done. Please don't judge me because of the color of my skin or some random group you put me in by how much money I make or maybe what accent I have. I mean, people come up with all kinds of ways to write you off before ever knowing you. You don't like it and I don't like it, do we? The judgment day of God is going to be in righteousness. And the Bible says we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. And so God is just. He will give to every man according to his deeds. You know, we understand this. My daughter is she's one of the ones I've talked about, tender-hearted. I always wanted to reach out to people who've been left out. If she sees somebody hurt, it bothers her. And my daughter, I can remember one of the things you want to get her stirred up is when somebody's been mistreated and I could hear her now, that's not fair. She's a law and order girl. She's also merciful. And she hates injustice. That's a beautiful, beautiful heart. But you see, you need to let that heart be molded by God and not by men. Because if we're not knowing God and understanding God, we can let our desire for justice, social justice, political justice, racial justice, whatever kind of justice you have, and if we let men define that justice, and you come up with a system where you're not taking the time to be fair to people, you'll be doing the work of Satan. Let's talk about Christians. The Apostle Paul. What did he do before he became a Christian? He was a law and order guy. He was a guy that believed with all of his heart. He was dealing with a situation where he was just. Notice what he did. In Acts 26:9, indeed, I myself thought I must do many things contrary to the Jesus of Nazareth.
Verse 11, and I punished them often in every synagogue and compelled them to blaspheme, and being exceedingly enraged against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities. Paul was captured by Satan. He was not fair. He would not listen. And if you talk to him during that time, I love God and I love his word. And he was filled with rage, anger. You don't control your passions. You can end up doing the most wicked things and think you're one of the most righteous person around. And Paul found out, and guess what Paul ended up having to face later? He had to face a lot of unfairness and injustice. All I'm talking to you tonight is by having a principled way to make judgments. Don't judge men by group identity. And again, I won't give you much information on this, except if you want to research it, postmodernism, modernism, critical theory, critical race theory. There's a lot of stuff out there that is becoming a dominant theme. It's being taught in every major corporation in this country, with few exceptions, where you judge people by their group. I really thought we got over racial stereotypes. I kind of thought, hey, that's something that is in the past, but now it's kind of being revived. Where you make judgments about me by your putting me in a group that I may have nothing to do with. Somebody puts me in a group, they don't like me. You know, why are you putting me in that group? And then you somehow judge the history of that group and you put up on my shoulders things that were done by other people in other ages, even 100 years ago. And somehow you make me responsible for it. And you'll tell me, oh, you, because you're in that group, you can't see. Well, okay, if I can't see, tell me exactly what I'm thinking and what I've done. I'll listen to you. Don't judge me without a fair process. And there's a huge, huge, huge problem today. You go to college and you get involved in some of these social sciences. This is being taught. And we got to face it. I love to talk with people and say, hey, look, if I've got a problem, tell me what I need to do. If I'm not understanding somebody and their background, I'd love to do that. Let me talk to them. Let's talk. Don't you somehow tell me. I want to interact with people as individuals. You can't take one racial group or one group in an area or even in the church and somehow say, okay, here you are. Here's the characteristic. And all these people think alike. They don't think alike, do we? We are a local congregation. We've got all kinds of diversity. You deal with people on the basis of individuality. And you see, what happens when you get into this mindset, you get into the area of accusation. If I think you're in an evil group and I don't think you can think for yourself, I write you off. I'll be angry with you. I'll not give you the time of day. That's what the world does. Titus 3, for we ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. Then how did we change? We ended up becoming to know the Lord. And the Lord appeared and changed our way of thinking. Okay, again, we're not covering the whole outline tonight. We're going to go a little longer, then we'll have our question session. And I'm sure in the question session we'll cover a few more things in this outline. I'm going to give you a few illustrations. When I was in Auburn, we met a girl that was on the track team. And her mother would come, and she was kind of on the outskirts of our group. She was struggling spiritually. And I remember we'd go to the track meet and show up and try to encourage her, and then her mother died. And then the next thing you know, I was seeing on Facebook that she was going to some campus event where they were protesting. And she was getting involved with a group protesting. I think, okay, well, you know, I didn't know much about what was going on then. This group is very well known now. I didn't know it at the time.
And they were having a die-in, and they were falling down in the streets as if they'd been killed because of past events in our history. And I go, okay, well, maybe she's participating in, you know, something that's not harmful. But I didn't pay a lot of attention to it until later she went back to her hometown. And then she started posting things. And one of the things that she said is she basically hated people of a certain race. I think she came out of that. But I also saw a young man once that I knew, and he was in Tuscaloosa. And he started participating in the various political things and protests on campus. Again, in itself, okay, you know, I'm not sure they're worth all the effort they're making. But the next thing you know, he began to post things in social media. And he was saying, this one particular man that's running for office, he's a racist because his parents named him after a Confederate general. I'm kind of thinking, well, I don't think he made the choice to have the name that he did. And I tried to talk to this brother, and he admitted he was wrong, and then I got blocked on Facebook, you know, or something like that. But the anger and rage. We do not want, you know, what's happening today, and this is written, by the way, in the New York Times of all places. It says people get addicted to feeling offended all the time because it gives them a high. Being self-righteous and morally superior feels good. Outrage is like a lot of other things that feel good, but over time devour us from the inside out. And it's even more insidious than most vices because we don't even consciously acknowledge that it has a pleasure. We're going to do Psalms 109, and then we're going to do our question session. Let's go to the next section real quick here. I want to show you us. Brethren, how do we handle accusations? What's the heart of the accuser, the typical heart of the accuser? What's the heart of the righteous person? I love this verse. Last night you asked some questions. Well, how can I, you know, gain strength to overcome anger? These are some of the passages to memorize. There's a whole bunch of them. In Psalms 109, verse 2, it says, they have spoken against me with a lying tongue. They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without a cause. In return for my love, they are my accusers. Notice, what do you do? Political world, okay, let's get dirt on them. They've attacked you. Now the rules are off and let's really attack them. What does this person do? But I give myself to prayer. Thus they have rewarded me evil for good and hatred for my love. Remember in Romans 12:17, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Now let's develop this. Let's look at this. Is it weakness to respond to accusations with love and prayer? What did Jesus do? We talked last night. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. There's love and prayer right there. And see, when we start doing this, we become like Jesus. Look at this verse. We'll come back to, we want to finish Psalms 109. Notice 1 Peter 3:8. Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Care for your accuser. Even though this is talking about Christians here, I care for my accuser. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted. Be courteous. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing. Knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. You know how to show this world that you really love Jesus? Are you ready? How do you respond to hurt? When you respond to hurt as a Christian and return love for good, you will show what Christ means to you more than almost any other possible event. Finish Psalms 109. Read this. I love this. Here's the accuser. Here's the guy that won the battle. He destroyed the reputation of the righteous. He got his vengeance or whatever was motivating him. Now notice what happens to his life long term. Because he did not remember to show mercy, but persecuted the poor and needy man, that he might even slay the broken in heart. Now notice this, please notice this. As he loved cursing, so let it come to him. As he did not delight in blessing, so let it be far from him. as he clothed himself with cursing, as with his garment. Now listen to this one. So let it enter his body like water and like oil into his bones. Scott gave me an illustration last night about an older lady he met once that was in her 80s and had never overcome an injustice done to her decades earlier, and it made her a bitter woman. My brethren, you will never, ever, ever regret showing good to those who do evil to you. Because if this starts entering your bones and entering your body, it will curse you. And tomorrow morning, I'm going to talk about what it does to relationships. We're going to talk a lot more about how overcoming this mindset is so crucial to an abundant life and to a good heart. Now, you notice I've left some of the outline, and what I want to do now is I want to take the questions. We'll probably cover some of these things, but any questions you have, we'll go ahead and take our 10-minute pause. And if you've got a further announcement, I guess you got sheets to be filled out. If you want to answer questions, we'll come back for our question session. I'm right, we're doing a question session tonight, right? Okay, very good. Okay, we'll take that 10-minute break now. Thank you for your interest. Great questions. And let's try to jump into them. I will say this, and those who know me, when I go to a congregation, I really try to emphasize these things all the time. I don't know if it's quite a hobby, but if we can learn how to handle these things, you create a great atmosphere in the congregation. You learn to communicate. You draw closer to God. And then you create an atmosphere which you can build. And I will say in the home, this will be the other thing. Building this atmosphere in the home is critical. And so, some of these questions we're going to develop even more tomorrow. But let's talk about this one. Here is a question. It says, interesting to hear more about the connection between thinking we know people motive circumstances better than others and making unrighteous judgments and developing an angry and bitter heart. You know, we're going to talk a lot more about pride tomorrow. But pride is kind of the motivating factor here between some of those unrighteous judgments. If you'll look at Luke 18:9, again, we'll be reading this verse a few times tomorrow. But the Pharisees, you know, the great weaknesses of the Pharisees was their heart. And we have the parable that Jesus told about the Pharisee and the tax collector. In Luke 18:9, it says, he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. And you know what he did? He saw this man. He didn't know this man. He knew he was a tax collector. But not all tax collectors were evil. And even an evil tax collector can turn and repent, and we certainly see that in Scripture. And so what he does, he tells this parable about the Pharisee and the tax collector. Verse 11, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, even as this tax collector. Look at me. Aren't you glad to have me, Lord? It is really, really dangerous when we start seeing somebody and reading minds and thinking we know what they're thinking and we haven't even spent time to get to know them. And that's pride. Pride is one of the great temptations that Christians face. You could take time to look at 1 Corinthians 8:1-3. Bible knowledge is great, but if it's knowledge without the right kind of heart, it says knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. If any man thinks he knows something, he knows nothing as he ought to know. He ought to be thankful he knows God. Pride is one of the great dangers to mature Christians. And so again, do not be judge, jury, and executioner. Be merciful. All right? Is it wrong for us as Christians to serve on a jury? Well, I do believe civil government exists for a purpose. I believe you can run for office. I believe you can serve on a jury as long as you do not compromise the principles of Christ. Now, I want to say when it comes to the national realm, You have to raise so much money, and the process of doing that would make it very rare that you would have somebody that's righteous to rise up that realm. But I'll say you cannot compromise your principles, and you got to be truthful. Governments do exist by God, and I think we could serve as an agent for the civil government. And Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. And then we'll see later here where verse 4, here we're talking about the punitive action of the civil government. But he is God's minister to you for good, but if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. When government functions as it ought to, there are things it could do, and you could be a part of that, but it doesn't relieve you of individual responsibility. If the government is putting you in a direction that is wrong, you've got to stand up and you can't be a part of it. And that goes for a lot of other relationships as well. Oh, here's a great question. Can anger and bitterness contribute to causing sickness? Absolutely. I think my introductory point tomorrow morning is how the body, our hearts are not designed to hold in anger. It's not. That's why God says, don't let the sun go down to your wrath. And you decide to bury it and you decide to hold it in, it creates all kinds of problems, including psychosomatic illness. Now, I'm not going to say, and I want to be careful here, brother, not everyone who struggles in some of these areas has sinned. When we talk about depression, there are various causes of depression. I remember occasions, one time when I was having some physical thing going with my heart, and I started feeling panic attacks, and I'm thinking, everything's great. I'm happy. Why am I feeling this? And so I want you to understand that sometimes people can experience things that have nothing to do with spiritual choices they've made, okay? But I've also seen loved ones that for whatever reason, they could not let go of things. And we're talking about a close relative that struggled with depression. I believe she died a faithful Christian, but she struggled with depression. And there were times she would have vivid memories of things that happened 40 years ago. And so again, the earlier in life you learn how to deal with this and not bury things, it will bless you. And you can research this. Once the body's under constant stress, there's a lot of things that happen. And depending on your background of how that may come out. And so, yes, it can affect your health without question. All right, here's a long one here. I agree with a lot about what you said about racial injustice, particularly about how judging people, the color of their skin, withholding them accountable for things they've never done wrong. I see and I know a lot of people of color who feel like their pain has never been acknowledged. How ought me acknowledge that hurt and previous injustices without letting anger run awry? This is a great question because we had this happen even when I was in Auburn. We had one student that felt like they needed to talk to the elders about their past injustices that happened to them. And the elders were glad to do that, and when they was over with, they were fine. Now, what I did during that time, she didn't know it, but I had worked with their parents and grandparents in past situations and had, you know, I guess what you could say, their battles that we fought along those lines. And I preached on the subject and preached on how, you know, the battles that churches have faced. I remember talking about one situation I faced where there was a lady that... she was racially prejudiced in the first congregation that I ever preached in. And I did not know this, but about a month before I came there to preach, in my first full-time work on my own, there had been a black lady that had visited on Sunday night, and this lady called her up and said, "Don't you ever come back to our services." I didn't know about that. Guess what? We had a lady in the congregation, Helen Bland. I'll never forget her name. She was in her late 70s, and she was black as well. And I found out later with the prejudiced woman, when she was angry and prejudiced, her skin was light enough colored. Well, guess what happened? Helen wanted to have a study with me and her sister. I'll never forget, they're both in their 70s. I went 10 minutes into this study and they both fell asleep on me. But anyway, I'll never forget that. But you know what happened? She had friends in the community that wanted to have studies at their house, and they were all black. And we started doing studies in the summer in Abbeville. We'd pack people into the room, we'd have these studies, and somebody would say, I want to study at my house. I want to study at my house. And we started doing all these studies, and everybody was agreeing with me and learning, but no one was obeying the gospel, and nobody visited services. You know why? They knew that we had a member that had threatened someone, and they knew it, and I didn't know it. It was over a year where finally one lady called me. She called me at 6 a.m. in the morning. She was recalling this later. Says, you know, I was afraid to call Larry at 9 o'clock at night. It might be too late. Well, I was a night owl. You know, calling me at 6 o'clock in the morning. That was probably the way. But she had to be baptized. And she was baptized, and then her husband was baptized. And then so many in that family were baptized, and some later became preachers. And you know what happened to the racially prejudiced woman? She was furious. And I met and talked with them, and they left the church. And the church prospered, and guess what happened? 2 years later, they repented and they came back. And she says, I was so wrong. And later, as that church went on, they became the only, I guess, white people in the church over time. And I remember, and they had the pictures of the members up in their homes, you know. And so she had made a complete different change. And you see, the people do that. People sometimes are just, they have foolish prejudices, but they're individuals, and you don't throw them away. And they can change. And I'll have to tell you, you talk about oppression and people looking down on me, I always felt like I've been looked down on. And the ones, when I've worked with churches in Birmingham, half black, half white, and others, and in other situations, and I feel very comfortable with people who feel like they've been looked down on. You know, we're brothers, you know. I can understand that. That's just part of what it's like. We as Christians, we're brothers and sisters in Christ. And so again, get the dope folks. But don't let the world denote your oppression. Because there's some people saying they're oppressed and they make multi-million dollars. And everybody wants to get their autograph and stuff and they say they're oppressed. Well, again, maybe they can tell me some things they've seen that I haven't. But we don't make a one-size-fits-all. We get to know people and listen to them and talk to them. Here's a great question. Jehoshaphat was a good king of Judah, but he aligned himself with evil Ahab. How does one balance looking for the good in others and yet manage to be clear-sighted enough to not be entrapped in an evil quagmire? 2 Chronicles 19. Great question. I want to be merciful. I want to help folks. But at the same time, I've got to see when somebody's heart is not right. Young ladies, now guys can do this too, but young ladies, sometimes I find young ladies, they want to date somebody and everybody in the world sees this is somebody you not ought to be around, but they're going to be their mother. I'm going to fix this guy. Now, I appreciate that, but I'm not sure the dating relationship is the way to do that. And many times, hopefully, they find out before they marry. You want to marry somebody who loves the Lord, has a passion for the Lord. You want to be wise concerning hearts. And again, Galatians 6:1, I wanted to mention this last night. I'm going to mention it tonight. Be wise. When you're young, you don't have the experience. And oftentimes when you're young, you can be very sincere and really believe somebody's story. People have hurt me. If you ever run across somebody, everybody's been mean to me. My parents have been mean to me. Others have been mean to me. I've been oppressed. But you understand me. And sometimes you find out later why everybody has oppressed them is because this person wasn't a good person. In Galatians 6:1, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Wisdom. Wisdom. Some people haven't grown enough spiritually to have the maturity to be able to deal with a hypocritical deceiver. My lesson the second lecture tomorrow morning is a crucial one. I'm going to tell you how a Christian can be recruited and destroyed, and it falls in this realm, where somebody presents themselves as righteous and loving, God is caring, and everybody's against me. And you've got a good heart. Join me. We're going to talk about Absaloms and others like that tomorrow. Okay, I'll give it a little thought there. Okay, continue with questions. How best to maintain an attitude of grace and compassion under stressful or difficult times, or see, I read this earlier. Anyway, but on hopeless times, yeah, hopeless times. Sometimes I feel like we're there right now. You know, as I start thinking what I know of history and politics and things, I'm looking, how could anything good come out of this? And you know what? It's not my business. That's God. God, you take care of it. Look at the book of Habakkuk. The book of Habakkuk, here starts off the book of Habakkuk. God, aren't you seeing the injustice? Habakkuk 1. The law is powerless. Nobody's enforcing the law. Sounds like today. God, don't you see? And God answered the prayers. I see it. And Babylon's coming. Ooh, Babylon, wait a minute. There's going to be slaughter. There's going to be famine. There's going to be terrible things. And you know what? The theme of the book of Habakkuk, the just shall live by his faith. Brethren, I don't know what we're going to face in the next 10 years. But we need to be ready if things are taken away. Read the book of Habakkuk. Build your faith there. Because if God is on our side, one man and God is a majority. And God, when you live by faith, you may suffer, you may have hunger, you may have people prejudiced against you, you may not have enough to eat. Brethren, I could see that day coming. God hasn't forsaken us. But how many beautiful scripture do we have to help us to understand what's happening to this country is not what's happening to the universe and to eternity? Think about old Jeremiah, man. Whew. The time he had to preach. But he's a great example to us, isn't he? All right. Do you have advice on how to distinguish between righteous anger at sin and self-righteous anger in response to wrong done to us? Now, I'll tell you one thing I have. And I've been blessed to have a good wife. I've been blessed to have some really good friends over the years. And you build the right kind of people around you, my wife is not afraid in a very kind way to get the 2x4 and pop my forehead with it, you know, break it on my forehead, because I need that. I'll never forget one time I was with a good man, Lynn Huggins. He was still at the Auburn, and I was preaching my first full-time work. Later, we worked together in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I remember there was somebody that hurt me, and I was telling Lynn, you know, I bet you this person did this, and I bet you this person was thinking this. And here I was going off on my rant about how bad that person was. And old Lynn says, Larry, you don't know that. What you're saying, you don't know that to be true. And I stop and I go, you're right. Thank you. Sometimes we get all fired up, we don't see it, and we're isolated. That's why isolation makes it more difficult. That's why this COVID isolation really has hurt some people where they weren't able to be around Christians as much, and they may have really let some, what I could call, cancer of the soul start developing. Go to Scripture, ask the question. Remember, I love the disciples when the Lord says, when are you going to forsake me? When have you betrayed me? And you know what they said? Lord, is it I? Guess what? Judas said it too, but he didn't mean it because he had fear pressure. But I love the Spirit. You know, I've got to be careful and watch my heart. How do I become more confident in my faith? I feel like I'm there, but something is missing. You know, faith takes time. Faith takes time. When you see how the Lord worked with his apostles, you know, he didn't dump the whole truckload on them at first when they had an issue. He'd plant a seed. He'd let it develop. You know, it takes time. One of the things is when you learn when you're hurt that you go to God in prayer. I'm going to tell a story about Stephen, and I'm not doing this as a parent to try to say that things did things right or to say that Stephen is infallible, but I can remember one of the steps that he took that really made me feel good in his development spiritually. You know, Stephen was like his dad. You know, I love running, and so Dad, he would used to go to my races and take pictures of my races, and he got into running. And he was in the freshman going to the biggest meet of the year, and he had not broken 5 minutes yet for a mile. It was a big deal. And he ran the perfect race against a really strong field. And it's 4 laps to be a mile. He had gone 3.5 laps. He was in the perfect position. And he was going to hit the straightaway, and something happened to him. I think what we learned later is that I think he had an iron deficiency. We don't know what happened, but suddenly he almost tripped up on that final straightaway, almost fell down. A bunch of people passed him, and he's got a 5:01. His running mate that was with him that had a 4:55. Now, again, you've got to understand, women, about guys, okay? We got this goal, and we missed it by 6 seconds, and Stephen was devastated. I mean, devastated. I remember trying to play the video a few days later. He just ran out of the room. He didn't want to see it. But here's, as a dad, what made me feel really good. And I know he wouldn't want me to tell you this, but I want to just mention it as a parent. He separated himself from the team. He went up in the stands by himself and opened up his New Testament. And in his grief, started reading the Bible. And I'm going, yes, yes. Those are the things that you want to develop. That when you're hurting, when you're struggling, you learn to let the Scriptures encourage you. You learn to pray to God because you love God and you want His help. That to me is a foundation in growing and developing that confidence. Okay, I think our time's about gone, but I think we'll go maybe just a few. We've got just 2 left. I think we can make it. Okay, here we go. Do you have advice on how to interact with brethren who are upset, overly involved, excited about politics and injustice? Have them hear their lectures? I try to plant seeds with them. I try to, sometimes when a person's all caught up in that, you sometimes ask them questions. Depends how close you are to them. One of the things I want to advise you, whether it be politics or something else, I'm glad that I had my friend Lynn Huggins with me, and I trusted him. When I started going off on something, he grabbed hold of me and said, "You're wrong." Now, you might not be that close to the person to do that. Sometimes you just plant a seed, ask a question. But you see, sometimes it'll be our friends will be the only people who can help. You likely in your life, if not already right now, may be in a unique relationship to help somebody that's going down another path. The preacher can't do it. Others can't do it. They may have mind blocks to everybody else, but you might be able to get through. Pray for wisdom. But do try to help them. Last question. How would you respond to someone who says, if you don't get involved in politics, you don't care? I remember years ago, Ed Bragdel, I loved Ed. There was another well-known preacher coming to him and said he was some event in another congregation that was not his business. This is happening here. We need to do something about it. We can't just ignore it. And Ed looked at him, "Watch me." Then he went back and did what he was doing and ignored it, Brethren, politics are not without a value, but they should not be our passion. And again, when you've got problems presented to me that really I don't even know if I know the problem, and when you have people that are presented to me that are going to fix the problem that really, the best thing I can do is pray to God. The best thing I can do. And so if we'll summarize tonight's lesson, watch your heart. What can start with a little bit can become a lot. And again, I've showed you another way tonight of how the wrong spirit can enter your heart. And it can destroy you. Thank you for your attention and questions.